work session.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Symbol 115, we heard the testimony on back on March 3rd from Michael Livingston. This is a bill that deals with delinquency, shelter hearings, excuse me, juvenile shelter hearings. You might recall that we had a discussion about the language that is in the statute. We've had some judges applying the statute, either misapplying it or strictly applying it, however you view it. These are the shelter hearings where sometimes you can't get all the people there, and we have to rely on reports at some times that would be hearsay in a trial court. But this amendment would allow the court to hear that evidence at that time, just the same way as they would in a probable cause hearing in a criminal matter, so that we can state of Oregon can make sure that there is that the safety of that child is taken care of, and that all the information can be received at that time. And this is not the time at which any adjudication would take place. This is the initial shelter hearing for the child, and this comes from the Department of Justice.
All right. Have we adopted the, I assume it's the Dash 1 amendment?
We have not, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
This is the Dash 1 amendment.
All right. Anybody on the committee want to help me with that?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Watts.
I move the adoption of the Dash 1 amendments to
Senator
Senate Bill 115.
Senator Watts moves the adoption of the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 115. Is there discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none. So ordered. Senator Walker, if you would.
Mr. Chair, I'd move Senate Bill 115 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Walker moves the adoption of Senate Bill 115 as amended. Moves Senate Bill 115 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Reagan.
During the hearing on this, I raised some questions as to why we're passing a bill that says evidence can be admitted regardless of its relevancy, and I thought that made no sense at all. And the response that I got was, well, you're right, it doesn't make sense, and the language is archaic. excuse me, but that is the language that we use. And I wasn't satisfied with that response then, and I'm still not. And I'm not going to vote for a bill that perpetuates using language that I think is incomprehensible and archaic just because it seems to fit with other archaic language. So I'm going to vote no, but that's not saying I don't agree with the intention of the bill.
Council, do you want to respond?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Ringo, I want to make it clear, under the amendments, if you look at page 2 of the Hannah Gross bill, it says on line 4, if the evidence is relevant to the determinations and findings required under this section, as used in this paragraph, relevant evidence has the meaning given that term in ORS 4150, which would be the one that says it makes it more, anything more likely than not. So I think that Mr. Travis, and he's here, and I know that he and Mr. Livingston worked on this, if you'd like to have them explain that. I think they made an effort at trying to make sure it didn't say.
You know, I apologize. Actually, I had not seen the amendments, so I withdraw what I said.
Okay. Excuse me.
All right.
I apologize for not getting that to you beforehand.
All right. So you're fine?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Any other discussion on the motion? There's none. Any objections to the motion? The motion passes. Senator Walker, would you like to carry that?
Sure.
You're never in the quest to be number one. All right. Work session, Senate Bill 212, Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Senate Bill 212, this comes from the Governor's Office, Department of State Police. We had testimony on this back in February, and this is a bill that basically the state police feel they need to comply with some federal rules about background checks. You might remember we had a discussion about background checks, and Andrea Meyer was here, and she from the ACLU, and she wanted to make sure we had language that said that the FBI shall return fingerprint cards. And in the testimony she gave, she mentioned a bill that we passed last session, which was House Bill 2781, that I used as a model to put the language about returning the prints to Oregon from the FBI. So if you look on, Jane did a Hand and Gross bill and it's with the dash two amendments, and you'll see on page two, you'll see at the bottom of the page the language that was added. The Federal Bureau of Investigation shall return the fingerprint cards used to conduct the criminal checks and may not keep any record of the fingerprints. So that is basically the change that the amendments do. You may recall or you may not recall, this bill basically amends how fingerprint checks are requested and received for concealed handgun permits and for racing and for polygraphers. All of those statutes have a mechanism for getting a background check. This amendments are done so that they comply with what the feds require for how we have a statutory enactment to request those.
Right.
The dash two amendments.
And I assume they still need to be adopted.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
All right.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Walker.
I move the adoption of the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 212.
Senator Walker moves the adoption of the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 212. Is there discussion? Andrea, you okay? All right, great. Right.
And, Mr. Chair, I just want to comment that I really appreciate it when Jane does the hand and gross. I'm a visual learner, and it's better to see it in the bill.
Me, too. I have a keen sense of the obvious. It's right in front of me. I trip over it. I usually understand it. Further discussion? None.
Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 212 as amended to the floor with a Ducasse recommendation.
Senator Walker moves the Senate Bill 212 as amended to be sent to the floor with the Senate with a Ducasse recommendation. Discussion. Any objections? Hearing none. Suspend the order. Who wants to carry this one?
I think Charles.
Senator Charles Starr? Okay. Senator Charles Starr. Thank you, sir. All right. Senate Bill 617, work session.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 617 is the bill that we heard testimony on just, I think, a little over a week ago on March 25th. My time is going quickly. This is the restitution bill that Attorney General Hardy Myers has requested. This is the bill that would require the ordering of restitution in criminal cases in which there is pecuniary damage. Pecuniary just means economic damage that can be proven. It would not include things like pain and suffering, but would be actual what we would call special damages or economic damages in a civil case. The amendments here are technical, and they're ones that were worked out between the Department of Justice and the Judicial Department. Briefly, what they do is, let's see if any of my experts are here on this. I don't see them. Basically, it changes the procedure on how these shall be ordered. It doesn't change any of the intent of the law as far as making it clear that restitution will be entered in the full amount and the ability to pay of the defendant will come into play only for the payment fee. I believe the testimony we heard was that the Department of Justice was concerned and wanted to capture the restitution for victims in situations where a person does have an ability to pay later in life, and so that they wanted to make sure that the victims did receive that. And Brad Swank and Department of Justice worked on these amendments on how to effectuate that.
All right.
And they're the dash one amendments.
All right. Great.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Senator Walker.
I'll move the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 617.
Senator Walker moves the adoption of the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 617. Is there discussion? Any objection? Discussion on your motion.
Yes, Connie Gallagher came by my office on the 10th and explained a little bit more about the issue in that we actually have very few defendants who are unable to pay, and some make payments as low as $5, which I think is appropriate. There's very few who are on disability enough that they can't even make those smaller payments. So I think with these technical changes, the bill is a good one.
All right, great. Any further discussion on the motion? There's not. Motion passes. Since there was no objection, for the record.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 617 as amended to the floor with a Ducasse recommendation.
Senator Walker now moves Senate Bill 617 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a Ducasse recommendation. Discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ringo.
Just to pose a question perhaps to the committee, I mean, my understanding is the courts already have the discretion as to whether to impose restitution. Isn't that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ringo, a court may do restitution, and the courts typically, when ordering restitution, first of all, that there has to be a proof of pecuniary damage, and the state takes that role, basically, of proving what the restitution amount would be, or many times it's stipulated to as part of an agreement. Mm-hmm. This bill would make the ordering of restitution mandatory, and the ability to pay factoring would only come in not as to whether restitution shall be ordered, but how the pay schedule would be placed for the defendant.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, go ahead.
Just a comment. I think I read in the paper yesterday that right now there are outstanding fines and some restitution orders in the amounts of more than $100 million. And it just pointed out to me that we're not doing a real job, a good job collecting on the restitution. The
judicial branch pretty much sucks at collecting orders.
But that may be.
They had a turnover like beneficial or household finance. I can figure it out in a heartbeat.
Mr. Chair, the other comment that I just make is that, you know, one of the lessons a lot of people glean from Measure 11 is that you do want some degree of discretion on the part of the court. And that even though I completely support the concept of restitution, I do right. wonder whether it makes sense to remove the judge's discretion as to when to order it.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a valid point, Senator Ringo. I think the bigger problem, as you point out, is the collection of restitution and fines. They just, for whatever reason, are not good at it, and we've made changes to the law to try to, you know, improve that. But the restitution, if I understand correctly, the restitution amounts are not even tracked in computer systems.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, restitution is a part of the judgment. And so it would go into the judgment, but then it falls to the courts and the probation officers to see how they're coming in as collections. And of course, if a person is not paying their restitution, they're not complying with their probation, for example. It is very difficult to collect restitution, for example, when a person is incarcerated. I think there is a tracking mechanism, although I think, as you said, it's difficult to track and make sure that it's all coming in.
And I have my own opinion. I just don't think they do a good job of it.
Right.
All right. Further discussion? Where was I? This is the motion, right? Mm-hmm. Any objections to the motion? Senator Walker.
I think it's just been adopted.
Yeah, we just adopted the bill.
Did we move the bill?
Yeah. That's what my notes
are. Did I miss the moving of the bill?
Yeah.
Okay. We moved the bill.
Yeah, we adopted the dash one.
But ask me questions, Senator.
And then Charlie had a question.
All right.
And who's going to carry it?
And just make sure, Jane, is that correct? Okay, good. Thank you. I don't want to have Jane here to the Senate telling me that we were all wrong. Okay. Senator Walker. Senator.
Okay.
Let's get at this stuff. I did on purpose. Okay. Senate Bill 466, work session.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Senate Bill 466 is the bill that we were referring to as the metal underpants bill in our discussion on March 13th. This has been substantially amended. If you look at the Dash 1 amendments, I talked to some of the prosecutors who prosecute people for using theft devices like the ones that were mentioned in Ms. Brandis' testimony, and they told me that they currently prosecute those type of cases under the statute ORS 164-235, which is a person commits a crime of possession of burglar's tools. And so what I did is I amended that statute so that it would not amend the language of the bill, but would amend what it's called so that it will make sure that people understand that they can prosecute for the possession of a theft device if in those situations. And if you look at the definition on the Dash 1 amendments, on line 16 of page 1, the term burglar tool has been changed, so it says burglar tool or theft device, but you'll see that the language of that definition has not changed, so that we can keep that definition, which has been in place for some time, I believe since the criminal code was entered in 71. And so you can see that if you look at the end of that, if anyone uses any instrument or other article adapted or designed for committing or facilitating a forcible entry into premises, that would be the burglary, or theft by a physical taking. And that would be the issue that was brought up in the testimony on the people who are using aluminum foil to evade the electronic devices. So those are the Dash 1 amendments.
All right. Any discussion on the Dash 1 amendments?
Mr. Chair, I'm still not sure about this bill yet, so I need to look at this a little bit longer. You know, it was a joke. You thought it was a joke, but I talked about someone maybe having a fetish, but...
I didn't think it was a joke. I think it
was serious. I just need to take a look at these a little bit longer.
All right. I'm sensing that there's a constitutional issue occurring on this bill. That's correct.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Constitutional issue? The majority? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 466. And anybody who has a concern about that, I'll direct them to the Vice Chair. And Senator Walker, if has any interest in some aspects of this.
Yeah, I want to hear about this.
All right. Where am I? 628. Work session. Council.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 628. We heard testimony on this bill on April 2nd. Mr. Chairman, this bill has to do with records involving child abuse. And we heard the discussions, and I think I, in my explanation, made this bill more complicated than it is, and I want to clarify that. DHS has rules about keeping child abuse records protected, and what has happened is some of the law enforcement agencies have felt that they have to comply with those for their own law enforcement police reports, etc. And so they are not willing to give those reports to other law enforcement agencies. And this bill would make it clear in the there's a Dash 1 amendment to the bill. And if you look at page 2 of those amendments, line 16, a law enforcement agency may make reports and records available to other law enforcement agencies with prosecutorial functions if it's necessary to investigate. So I believe I made it, I confused the matter when we had the testimony on this bill. We're not talking necessarily about the Department of Human Services reports. We're talking about the law enforcement agency reports themselves that can be shared to complete investigation and enforcement. On page 2, line 22, subsection 4, this would be the part about when the investigation is completed and a file is closed, they can share those reports so that they can manage people who are in the Department of Corrections or the State Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision. This contemplates a situation where a person has been convicted, say, for child sex abuse, and the Department of Corrections or the parole want to supervise who that person is, has visitation with, for example, and want to make sure that it's not with the victims of that crime, so that they would have sharing in that, so they can manage those people. And then I think if you look at the rest of the amendments to Dash 1 amendments, they're just bearing out the technical way that happens. If you look on page 3, line 15, I'll just read, notwithstanding paragraph A of this subsection, a law enforcement agency, a community corrections agency, the Department of Corrections, and the State Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision may disclose records made available to them under subsection 4 of this subsection to each other and to law enforcement for the purposes of managing and supervising offenders in custody or on probation and parole. So the idea is within law enforcement for the purposes of investigation or management of convicted people on parole or in custody.
All right. So everybody okay? Concerns, issues? Let's talk about it.
Well, Mr. Chair, I was just commenting to Senator Ferriero. This is the bill that he had questions about in terms of unfounded matters being available.
Okay.
And that was...
Mr. Chairman and Senator, I think that was my fault in mis-explaining, and I apologize.
Okay. Okay.
So the information available to the Department of Corrections would be based on a conviction.
Okay.
Serving a sentence for or being supervised.
Mr. Chairman, it would be closed investigations, and also it would be sharing the, as we would do in any law enforcement matter, sharing reports. These reports for investigation and law enforcement and prosecution, it was just an issue of some of the law enforcement agencies being uncertain as to whether, because these specific law enforcement reports dealt with child abuse, they felt uncertain that they could share those for enforcement. And this makes clear that they could. But then, yes, after the case is closed and a person is in prison, then these could be used to aid in management of the person who's in custody. I think that it would it leaves the issues to law enforcement to deal with the way they would any other case, so that there's not an exception.
All right. Questions? Any motion here for the adoption of the dash one? Senator Burdick, are you going to cooperate with me now, or I?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'm most.
Go ahead.
He's been using me by default.
Chair like tie right here. No, okay. Go ahead.
Chair, I move the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 628.
All right, thank you. Senator Burdick moves the adoption of the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 628. Discussion? Are there any objections to the dash one amendments?
No objection, but I just need to ask the question because I forgot.
Okay.
And I wasn't listening as close as I should have to Craig. But are the criminal defense lawyers okay with this amendment now?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Burdick.
I actually have a letter in my file from Kelly Sky from the OCDLA saying that they are comfortable after discussions with the Department of Corrections.
Oh, and it is in my file as well.
All right.
If I would just look a little farther.
All right.
All right.
Any further discussion? No objections? Motion passes. The amendment has been adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Burdick.
I'll move Senate Bill 628 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Burdick now moves Senate Bill 628 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Hearing none. So ordered. And let me see. Senator Ringo, would you like to carry that?
Oh, I'd like to.
Be more than, are you in the running for the most number of bills carried here? No?
He's not even close.
Well, we got to get him caught up here.
I think we need to move against, we need to take action against Senator Walker.
Oh, it would be Senator Bruce Starr, who is my chief competitor.
All right. All right,
on the other hand, we should advance our candidate.
Senate Bill 882.
Exactly right.
Mr. Chairman, members of committee, we just heard this bill last week. This is the bill that deals with adjudicating delinquency petitions in an agreement between the Judicial District and Warm Springs Tribe. I will refer to the Dash 1 amendments because those were the amendments we discussed on the 9th. This originally the bill did not deal with just one Indian tribe and did not deal with just one judicial district. The Dash 1s would do that. They would only deal with the 22nd Judicial District with the approval of the Chief Justice, and that judicial district may enter into a memorandum of understanding with the Warm Springs Tribe on how to adjudicate and dispose of delinquency cases. I believe we heard testimony from the head of juvenile out in these areas. That was Dan Ahern of Jefferson County. I've spoken to Peter Duell, who is the district attorney in Jefferson County, several times. He's supportive of this bill with the Dash 1 amendments. He was uneasy with the bill as written because he wanted to have a pilot program, and that is what this would be, and win the Dash 1 amendments.
Okay. Discussion about everybody fine with it? I think we're in work session. Senator Walker. No, Senator Burdick, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 882.
Senator Burdick moves the adoption of the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 882. Is there a discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, ma'am.
I love this bill. I just think it's a wonderful idea. It's too bad we can't go out with the rest of the tribes, but I appreciate the fact that we need to start with one tribe and see how it works. And then move forward next session, I hope. What I really like about this bill and the Dash 1s is just that I would think that a juvenile who is a member of the tribe would care more about what his tribal members think of him than the rest of us in the criminal justice system. And it's just an appropriate place to adjudicate their issues because they respect their elders tremendously. I just think this is a wonderful thing.
All right.
And I hope it works.
Further discussion on the Dash 1 amendment.
Move the Dash 1 amendment.
There are any
objections?
Okay. No objection. The motion passes. Senator Farioli.
Move the bill as amended, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Farioli moves.
To the floor of the due pass rate.
882 is amended with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you.
To the floor of the Senate. Kind of fragmented that. Anyway, we know what we're talking about. Any confusion? None? Any discussion? Further? No? Is it? No? Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You get to carry that fine piece of legislation. And now, I think we're up to truth or consequences.
What happened with 189? Is that off?
Well, 189, I'm sorry, 189 and 90 were holding over because there were some fiscal impact statements that were beyond what we envisioned. So we're going to have some discussions with the judicial branch to find out whether or not they are reasonably accurate.
I'm
right.
Going through that myself. All right.
I'm not sure if I need a break before we do this or not. But let's see. A pile of hair or what? All right. 5 minute break.
Wonderful, I guess, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, you set your alarm.
Members of the committee, you should be looking at Section 280-7 amendments. Starting on page 1, mainly they're all definitions. The one change at the bottom of page 1, you'll see three I. An increase in a charge imposed by insurer in connection with underwriting. We wanted to make sure that that did not trigger an adverse underwriting decision if there were small charges for certain fees, that an adverse underwriting decision should be defined as the policy, changing the actual policy rate for the consumer. If there were other incidental fees, that shouldn't trigger an adverse underwriting decision, which would require all the notice of provisions of the bill and that type of thing.
Senator
Burdick, you look like you have a concern.
Council, but let us an example of some of these fees.
Some of the fees would be when you apply for insurance, you if you have to pay a fee to have certain, I don't know, checks of your background or anything like that, or I'm actually not sure. Topping fees, fees to get records, those types of things. So if it anything other than the policy rate itself, in other words, I'm paying $300 for insurance, raising the $300 to $302 is going to be, if it's based on credit, will be an adverse decision. But if in the process of that I'm paying $4 for an extra insurance card, to keep in my wallet, raising that to $5 would not be would not be an increase in the fee that would trigger an adverse underwriting decision.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, and where does this appear?
Page 1.
line 24, at the very bottom, you see it says, imposition of a service fee is not a charge.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if we need a word like reasonable or some word to kind of qualify that.
Okay.
Because we just had a big discussion in this committee last week on how some of these fees could get out of control.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Ringo.
I guess the other issue I have on this is that whether something is an adverse action or not would be covered by the federal law under the Fair Credit Reporting Act, and it seems like it doesn't make sense for us to set up a different scheme as to whether a fee may or may not be considered an adverse action that would trigger other things.
Look, if we could, I just want to, let's just go through the bill. We'll note that issue and come back to it. I want to see if we understand the dash sevens, their general intent. If that's okay.
That's fine.
That's fine.
Okay. The next change from the last set you looked at, on page 10, line 3, when there is an adverse underwriting decision, the consumer is entitled to notice of what reasons the adverse underwriting decision were given for, and the summary was changed to be the most significant credit-related reasons. So in other words, when your credit score is used in part as reasons for an adverse underwriting decision, the insurers will have to give you at least the top four most significant credit reasons for that underwriting decision. The concern was that they didn't want to have it, that they had to run through, you had an accident in 1992 and you had a ticket in 1998, and they just wanted to focus on credit. What were the credit reasons that were included that generated the adverse underwriting decision? And that was the clarification on page 10. Then the operable paragraph or section is section 4, which starts at the very bottom of page 10 and continues on the top of page 11. Essentially, it starts off with A, the insurer may not cancel or non-renew personal insurance based in whole or in part on a consumer's credit history or insurance score. Essentially, it says, I mean, that is the prohibition on cancellation and renewal, which generated most of the complaints that we heard about in our initial hearing on these bills. You can't use credit history in cancellation or renewal. Now, little sub B on page 11, line 4, is an exception for companies that have affiliates. It allows credit to be used to play, or it says the placement of the consumer at this point of renewal with a affiliate is okay so long as it lowers the consumer's rate for insurance. And I think in the very first hearing we heard about certain companies have tiered systems where they put consumers in tiers. Other companies have affiliates where a certain consumer who has more of a risk, be it for credit or otherwise, might not be eligible for insurance with the primary company, but they would be eligible for essentially the same insurance with an affiliate company. And this paragraph was inserted to allow the companies that have that affiliate practice to continue to place people even at renewal in an affiliate so long as it lowered their insurance rate for substantially the same coverage. The insurance folks have indicated that that language might be a little problematic, and that we might, because you'll see on the next page, there is a process for a consumer who improves their credit to get a re-rating. It might be better to delete that subparagraph and just allow the consumer at their own request to be re-rated when they improve their insurance. But moving on to little c on line 9, page 11,
This says that you may not use credit history to decline coverage for personal insurance during the initial underwriting decision. If you do so, you can only do it in combination with other substantive underwriting factors. For instance, if the only difference or the only risk that a consumer had was a bad credit history, but their accident record was perfect, they had no tickets, you could not use credit to give them a lower rate. But if they had an accident or a ticket and that factored into their risk, then you could use credit history in combination with the other risk, like an accident, ticket, or otherwise. Little D on page 11, line 14, is essentially the blanket prohibition that you cannot use consumers' credit history to re-rate an existing policy, and we added the caveat, unless it lowers the consumer's rate. So in other words, you can't raise consumer's rate based on credit, but if you could give a consumer a better rate based on their credit score because it has improved, you could lower their rate. Again, the insurance folks told me that that might be a problem because essentially those whose credit remains poor and cannot get that lower rate are essentially, you know, realizing the higher rate that we're trying to protect against here. And they suggested deleting the language at starting with unless and getting rid of that, and again leaving just the portion on the next page allowing the consumer to write into their company and say, I've improved my credit, please re-rate my insurance.
Can you see that last part again?
Where exactly is that language on it?
The next page, on page 12, line starting with line 18, you're in sub 2, basically says that a consumer who's got an unfavorable credit unfavorable rating based in whole or part on their credit can annually request to be re-rated. The assumption would be that the consumer improves their credit report. They write to their insurance company. They say, my credit report has improved. Please re-rate me. And the insurance company would then do so. The problem, as I've been explained by the insurance folks, the problem with including the language regarding affiliates and the language regarding you can use credit if it lowers your score in on page 11 in subsection 4 is that it unfairly gives an advantage to companies that use affiliates as opposed to tiers, and two, it kind of it allows insurers to give better lower rates to people with better credit, thereby leaving the people with bad credit with the normal rate, and essentially it allows what we're trying to prevent here, because while you won't be raising anybody's rates, people with bad insurance will, and bad credit will still be stuck with the higher rate. They won't be able to get the discount.
Holly, you have any comments on that point? Zero? None? All right. So how long would it take you to get a dash 8 amendment deleting subparagraph B on page 11?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Holly Robinson, Legislative Council. Exactly what amendments do
you look on page 11, and counsel, you can correct me if I'm wrong, the idea is to delete subparagraph B,
right,
re-letter the subsequent paragraphs, and then in on line 15, we're deleting the word unless after insurance. Is that correct?
Yeah.
After insurance, insert a period, and delete the rest of the paragraph.
So on line 15 after insurance, you put a period, and then the rest of that paragraph is gone.
So line 15 would end at the word insurance.
That's correct.
Correct. And then the only other change would be that you reference sub D, which appears on page 11, 14. You reference that on a couple different statutes after that, like page 12, line 29, it says 1 sub D. That would have to be changed to 1 sub C now.
Mr. Chair, are you asking me if we can have these amendments done by the end of this committee meeting?
Yep.
We will do our best.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
I'm not sure I agree with these amendments. The idea that that on a renewal the consumer gets an improved rate, but only if he requests it, is something I guess nobody from the insurance industry came and asked me about that concept until this morning. And I don't know. I think there's lots of consumers right now that don't even know this is occurring, and that's one of the problems with it. But I think a lot of consumers aren't that attuned to their pricing of their insurance, whether that they should be or shouldn't be. But I guess I just want to say that to the committee that I need to go through this in a little more detail. I can't say that I'm going to vote for this. I would appreciate the input from others on the committee, but it strikes me that the idea of requiring somebody once a year to on their renewal that they please run a credit score, maybe they shouldn't have to ask. Maybe it should be done anyway. But I really haven't had a chance to have a full discussion with the industry folks on this subject.
Well, I guess my issue is that we've been doing this for a long time.
We sure have.
And we're not going to create the perfect bill.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ringo asked for other input. I actually like the changes. I think it's unrealistic to think that an insurance company would, certainly in the case of the line 15, that stuff that we delayed, unless using a consumer's credit history, lowers the rate. And that leaves it discretionary. I can't imagine a situation where an insurance company would go through their records and say, oh, here, we can lower this one. And, I think there's an inherent protection here because if somebody's credit history improves, they have other options. They can go get a new insurance company. It's a competitive business. So I think there's some protection there. I'm uncomfortable with the deletion. What's kind of good for the goose is good for the gander here in terms of just not using this stuff.
Let me ask real quick. If this amendment was adopted among the insurance lobby sitting in the room, which insurance companies would not support the bill?
Which amendment are you talking about? The amendment?
Right.
Okay. Trying to turn around.
No, I just want to know if we do the amendment to the bill, are the insurance companies on board or not? If they're not on board, then we're going to run 260 and be done with it. Yeah, if you want. Holly, why don't you go get the amendment drafted if you can.
I've got an aggressive
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chair, let me just raise one other issue that the insurance division has raised. They have requested, and I think this is really more of a technical amendment, there's a dispute resolution procedure if they use disputed credit history that will apply prospectively. They have asked that it be applied also to renewal of policies, and it would seem that would make sense. I don't see it as a huge policy issue. It's probably something right. We should have carried forward.
Thank you. That makes sense to me, at least, Mr. Chair. Maybe you can maybe choose something else.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the word for the day is obfuscate. The complexity of these compromises, the Byzantine logic, it doesn't protect consumers from having getting stranded at a high rate or being penalized for simply having a number of credit reports drawn on their credit histories. I have not seen or heard from any of the industry on this issue since we started talking about this issue. And I still do not believe that there is any validity in the correlation between the credit score and the underwriting decision. I know there is a statistical correlation. I am not convinced it's valid. There are lots of false correlations that you can show in any society, in any number of things. The credit report has a very valid role to play in any business decision, and that is whether or not to extend credit and on what terms. That is its role. I think the whole concept has been subverted. The argument is that rates will increase if you have the credit score, or rates will increase if you remove the credit score in the underwriting decision. It's to me, I think Senate Bill 260 is a much better message to send to the public. We were asked to do that by agents and citizens, and what the industry has done in response to that is the word of the day, obfuscate.
Well, I have to dissent from your opinion. The insurance industry has done exactly what I asked them to do, and that was to try to come back with a political compromise that they can support in the House of Representatives. Because we can make all the political statements we want, pass a bill that outlaws credit scoring, but if it dies in the House of Representatives, in my opinion, it achieved nothing for consumers. So the chair's objective here was to find a political compromise.
Well, Mr. Chairman, nobody has discussed any compromise at all with me as a member of the committee.
All right. So what does the committee want to do?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to hear from Mr. Powell on the question
you
asked.
All right. Mr. Powell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is John Powell, representing State Farm Insurance Companies. When I was a member of this body, I had a creek in my district called Muddy Creek. And one time, the Soil and Water Conservation District was dredging upstream from a dairy farmer. The dairy farmer relied on the creek for the cows to get water. The contractor got behind, and instead of using a shovel, he took the bulldozer down into the creek and was just doing this. Well, it got so muddy downstream, the cows wouldn't drink the water. This constituent called me and said, you've got to do something about it. So I called the DEQ, and I said, there's mud in this creek, and the cows won't drink out of it. And they said, what's the name of the creek? I said, Muddy Creek. And they said, there's mud in Muddy Creek. What do you want us to do about it? Well, I feel that this is kind of the same situation. We have been trying to work out a compromise, and I think in response to Senator Farioli's question, one of the reasons we couldn't talk to you all prior to today is the amendments have been being reworked and over these technical issues. And this document, the Dash 8s, came in after 8 o'clock this morning. So we've been unable to reach a final agreement. I think it's fair to say that in principle, the industry agrees with the approach of these amendments, banning the use of credit on renewal or on cancellation. The reason for the banter about these technical amendments is that you have people out there placed in different situations, and there's got to be a transition out of that system so that insureds can get from where they are today to eventually this system that will prohibit the use and get people to their appropriate rating tier or in the appropriate company. So in essence, the goal of these amendments is to limit the use of credit in the purest sense only at the initial underwriting stage. And the rest of it then is what happens to consumers who are placed in an affiliate or in a tier that's inappropriate and giving them a way to improve their credit. So that is, I think, the reason for difficulty in getting the appropriate amendments. But I think it's fair to say that overall, in theory, what this is trying to do, the industry in general agrees with it. Oregon Mutual continues to oppose it because they believe companies that have used credit in their tiering rate structure will have an advantage in the long run because they basically have used what, in all fairness to Senator Farioli's comments, is believed to be a very good correlation, and that they have this advantage because they had those people in those tiers in this re-rating process. Would allow them in for a while at least to continue that, and they think that that's unfair. But I think that in general we agree with this approach. We would, I think, want to put an asterisk by that to say that as the bill moves forward, if it's in this form, that we would continue to try to work on any details that would not obstruct that general approach. And Mr. Chair, with just one other indication, on page 13, subsection 6, I think amounts to a ban on using the category of no credit. because it has the director making rules for the use of this category, and the language in sub A and B on lines 19 through 24 would probably make it impossible for a rule to allow it. So it might be cleaner simply if the policy decision is to ban it, the use of people who have no credit, that it'd probably be cleaner just to do that. Now, having said that, it's possible to continue to consider that if the bill moves along.
All right, but one question of counsel. Commerce Clause issues and the banning of credit. Do we have any limitations as far as the state's ability to ban the use of credit scoring?
I don't really know off the top of my head, but Commerce Clause usually is not a limitation on state powers. It's a limitation on the federal powers. So the federal government, it would be more of a preemption issue than a commerce issue for Oregon as a state. I don't see any commerce problem for the state of Oregon in banning the use of credit scoring.
All right.
But Adam.
Close the public hearing on 280 and open a public hearing on, a work session on Senate Bill 260. Senator Brady.
We don't have the
amendments. There are no amendments to Senate Bill 260. Okay.
There is a dash one, Mr. Chairman, to 260, which Senator Wingo should have.
Mr. Chair, it's your intention to pass 260, and I would ask it first to adopt the dash one amendments.
Do we have them?
Got your bills out for 260.
Pretty short day.
Still mine. Okay. Oh, yeah, shoot.
Well, let's just read them into the record.
Yes.
I'm just waiting for Senator Burdick to get her bill out. The dash one amendments say on line one, in line 15 of the printed bill, after eligibility, insert or rates. OR space rates.
Dash one amendment?
This is the dash one amendment.
And whose amendment is it?
It's Senator Ringo's amendment.
And that's in line.
Line 15 of the printed bill, after eligibility, insert the two words or rates. In line. There's one more.
Well, oh, wait, hang on. We're not done?
Sorry.
Or what?
In line 21, after insurer, line 21, after the word insurer, insert this statement. That issues personal insurance policies in this state. In line 21, after the word insurer, insert that issues personal insurance policies in this state.
Everybody clear on the dash one amendment?
Mm-hmm.
Anybody want me to repeat them?
Yep. Senator Riegel?
Mr. Chair, the important one is line 15 or rates. The credit history. You need to consider both eligibility and rates. I move the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 260.
Senator Ringo moves the adoption of the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 260. Discussion. Objection. Chair objects. Motion passes.
Chair.
Senator Ringo.
I move Senate Bill 260 to the floor with a two-pass recommendation.
Senator Ringo moves the adoption of Senate Bill 260 be sent to the floor of the Senate as amended. That's a two-pass recommendation. Discussion. Political diatribe, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Ringo.
I would ask for your guidance as to what this would mean with respect to the negotiations and the discussions with the insurance industry.
I think that's up to them. All right.
Well,
further discussion. Senator Walker.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think it's unfortunate we can't come to some agreement. We've been, you know, my word last session was putzing. We've been putzing around. I think there's been legitimate attempts at this, but we're not there. And it's April 15th.
Right.
So,
Chair agrees. So there we go.
I guess this is a comment. A long time I had told the folks in the insurance industry that I would agree not to pursue a ban, that I would pursue something that would allow it only on initial underwriting. And I would like to continue to work with folks so that on the House side we can present amendments that would do that. Frankly, I think there will be people that will be advocating for a complete ban on the House, but I would want to try to reach the compromise that we've all been negotiating towards.
Well, the thing that sent me over the edge is the fact that Oregon Mutual Insurance Company does not support any of this. I think that's complete nonsense.
Mm-hmm. Question, Mr. Chair.
Senator Burdick.
Well, Mr. Chair, I agree with you. I just think to expect us to compensate for business practices in the past is completely unreasonable, and I was disappointed in that, too. I would encourage the people who I think could work really constructively on this to continue, because if we get this back again, it's just the problem is not going to go away. It's unfortunate we weren't able to reach closure in our committee, but it's just a question, as far as I see it, of tactics. This bill's going over to the House, you know, probably, and I think they just ought to keep going on. I commend Senator Ringo for being willing to work with them, and I certainly am personally willing to work with them.
All right. Any further comments? Senator Farrell.
Mr. Chairman, the I'm willing to vote for Senate Bill 260 as is, but I'm advised by a couple of colleagues on this committee that it would go to the House and possibly to the Senate floor to an uncertain future, and possibly a certain future. I don't like the use of credit reports in the scoring. I think I've made that pretty clear from the first day we had the hearing. But I am unwilling to watch the demise of this, quote, compromise, if there's any chance to put it together. So I would ask the chairman when you intend to reschedule 280.
I do not.
Mr. Chairman, I
will not reschedule 260 after the day either.
I see. Because, Mr. Chairman, I was going to ask you if you would be willing to accept a motion to lay 260 on the table to the date certain that the amendments for 280.
I will not.
Okay.
And those are the four that died.
And Mr. Chair, if we're not going to do anything else with 280, I would ask that if Holly Robinson is listening, that she not.
Yeah, that's right. She can suspend her work on the bill.
To get this back to us by 10. Also, I would hope, I've heard comments from both Senator Farrioli and Senator Ringo that they've not been involved in the discussions with the insurance companies on these compromises. And that doesn't seem appropriate to me, since they were the driving forces behind these bills. So I would encourage that involvement with the people who make these decisions.
Mr. Chairman, after today, it may be a moot point.
Well, I'm going to follow through with my word. I said either one or the other. Any further discussion on the motion to send Senate Bill 260 as amended before the Senate? Any objections to Senate Bill 260 before the Senate?
As amended.
As amended with a due pass recommendation. No objections. Motion passes. Senator Cannon will carry the bill. We're adjourned.